we're back once again for the matinee show.
Yeah, I think the first one is Z, right?
It is. Now, okay. This is one that came out, I believe it came out late last year. It premiered actually at the same film festival that Daniel Isn't Real also premiered at, which we reviewed a little while back. This one actually just dropped on Shudder just a couple days ago. I believe this is a Canadian film. The guy that directed it is Brandon Christensen. And he also directed one called Stillborn, which is also on Shudder, and which is also quite good if you want to check that one out. This was a good one. I liked this movie a lot.
Did we see this on Shudder? Or we see this
Shudder.
On, we
yeah.
saw it on Shudder. Okay,
yeah, they just added it on Shudder like a few days ago.
It was a good movie. It's basically a Poltergeist movie.
Yeah.
And it kind of does kind of fit Poltergeist phenomenon. Think about it. I mean, you know, whenever an object moves, they weren't quite looking at it. And it was something kind of like the creation of a subconscious.
Yeah.
You guess. There might have been some outside force too, maybe something demonic. But that's always been kind of in Poltergeist cases, theorized that it was a combination of, you know what I mean, a kid and something external.
Yeah.
But either way, I thought it was a pretty good movie. Good
little
budget movie.
It was like really, really well done, I thought. I mean, the thing about it, okay, so basically it's a pretty like simple setup. It's like, you know, there's your regular kind of middle class family. They have a son named Joshua, and Joshua starts having an imaginary friend, which, you know, no one thinks is particularly weird. But then as it kind of goes on, shit gets like stranger and stranger. Like the kid starts insisting that, you know, they put out like two sandwiches so that Z, which is what he calls the imaginary friend, can have a sandwich too. And then the mom ends up finding out that, like, he gets suspended from school, right? Or something like that. And
none of the kids want to play with him. And
and she, like, is the last to know about this, because I guess her husband had been, like, keeping some stuff from her too. But I guess, like, all of his little friends and everything were, you know, their moms didn't want him playing with them anymore, and she could, even though he seems like he's acting fairly normal other than having this imaginary friend. However, it then starts to, you know, come to pass that perhaps this imaginary friend is not so imaginary after all.
Yeah, and this part of the movie really kind of gave me an Amityville Horror vibe with the whole Jody phenomenon.
Yeah.
It was kind of reminding me a lot of that.
Yeah.
Not quite as bad as the Amityville, though. I loved Amityville Horror when it came out as a kid. You watch it now, it's not that good.
Yeah, it's an okay movie, I don't think it holds up as well as maybe some other from that from that era.
No, it looks like a made-for-TV movie nowadays. Although, I've never seen it on Blu-ray.
True.
It may hold up a little bit better on Blu-ray. Maybe I'll get it on Blu-ray one of these days.
Yeah.
If I can find it for a decent price. But it kind of gave me that feeling that I got when I saw the Amityville Horror back when I was a kid. Of course, because I'm not as scared.
Yeah.
Nothing scares me like, you know, like it used to when you were a kid. But it had that tone. I liked it. It's good.
Yeah, and it really had some really nicely creepy imagery. There was like some really, really fucking creepy imagery in this shit. And like even just some stuff that's like really simple. Like, when she first starts thinking that she sees this thing, or, you know, begins to suspect that maybe there is something to this, that it's not an imaginary friend after all, it's like there's just something really simple, like, you know, one of his toys, like an alphabet toy that just, like, makes this, like, kind of robotic, like, sound all the time and, like, kind of flashes and stuff, like, in his room. Like, some of his toys, like, coming on, like, when no one's in the room and shit like that. And also, I have to say that when the kid draws the Z on the wall, like, of his painting, he painted it on there or something like that, that was pretty disturbing looking, I have to say. Gave me a little bit of a Babadook kind of vibe, I guess. He looked a little bit like that.
Having experienced Poltergeist phenomena myself personally as a kid, this does kind of remind me of what it's like. This is a very exaggerated, you know.
Well, yeah, it's a movie.
But it's a movie. You have to exaggerate it for it, I think, to make a good movie. Documentary, no, but movie, yeah. But that's pretty much it.
Yeah, that's phenomenal. I was sitting there watching that, and it's like I got like totally sucked into the story of like what was going on with this kid and this family and everything, and then the tension between the husband and wife because he's like keeping info from her and all this other kind of shit, and then so her like not knowing all of this stuff that's happening like at school and with the kid's friends and everything, and him seeming like totally normal when he's around her, but then like you know the dad being kind of like absent all the time. It's kind of like, you know, the episodes of A Haunting where the dude's always at work because she's like a stay-at-home mom. And, you know, she's trying to tell him, hey, I think his imaginary friend might be real. And, of course, the husband doesn't believe her and thinks she's nuts and all this other kind of shit. So, and then she kind of maybe starts to think she's nuts, too. And it's like they have to go to a psychiatrist and all this other kind of shit. But there's, like, some really, really cool, like, I was one scene in particular, like where she's in a bathtub, and that's all I'm gonna say.
Yeah,
but weird. That was like a creepy, creepy, like fucking. Yeah. And also the one scene with the stairs and the kid, that was like I legit was like, like that.
Yeah, she's seeing real phenomena happening, but she's also seeing like a mixture of I guess possibly hallucinations or visions, or you're not really sure, apparitions of some sort. But what I really liked is the part where she goes ahead and agrees to marry it. And during being married to it, she's actually interacting with it, playing lava games about not stepping on the floor. And it has a childlike character, Z, this poltergeist, which that fits right in with, you know, what I saw.
Yeah.
You know what I mean, it had a kind of like a childlike
person. Even though it looks terrifying.
Yeah, well, like I said, read Mountain Mountain Poltergeist. You'll see, you know, I'll talk about it here on the show. It's a mixture of stuff, you know. It'll scare you 1 minute, and then all of a sudden you think it's funny, and then it starts doing funny stuff, and then it scares you again. But it did kind of have a menacing presence to it sometimes, you know.
Yeah,
but overall, it was disturbing. You can't see it.
Because, I mean, there was one scene early on where the kid was like, he snuck down to the kitchen in the middle of the night, and he's like making Z a peanut butter sandwich, and he had to like cut the crusts off. You know what I mean? And he was just little, and he wasn't supposed to be using a knife and stuff. So it's like the kid was like him, but it's like, I mean, there's kind of an explanation for it later on, but like you said, they leave it ambiguous as to whether...
Like, what is it? Is it a ghost? Is it a demon? Is it a fucking monster? Is it a psychic emanation from her own subconscious? It's all there. To me, it's a poltergeist movie.
That's what it is to me. I mean, that's kind of how I interpreted it as well. But, I mean, this one, it's, like I said, it's not a super original idea. It's a very simple idea. And as I said, we reviewed Daniel Isn't Real, which was also kind of about an imaginary friend, too. So it's kind of interesting that they both premiered at the same film festival. But this is, like, a wildly different tone to that one. This is just a really creepy poltergeist-type movie that is just really, really, it's not a super original idea, but it's just really, really well executed. And it has like some really, really creepy imagery, really like dread inducing kind of shots. It's shot really beautifully. The acting is really good. And it's just a really, really solid horror movie. I was watching like another review of it where they said that, you know, this, you know, is probably, it could be in the Conjuring universe, except it's like way better than many of the last movies that were in the Conjuring movies, you know, universe that came out, like The Nun and La Llorona and all those other kind of movies. This is like a thousand times better than those movies.
This movie actually does stick to classic poltergeist phenomenon. All right. It does stick to what is commonly reported, but the emphasis is slightly different.
Yeah.
In this one, a poltergeist is portrayed as being very coherent, and that it has a theme and a continuing theme. Like a personality.
Yeah.
From my personal experience of poltergeist, that's not the way they really are. They're a lot more wishy-washy. They're sometimes motherfuckers. It does this for a while, then it does that for a while, then it does this for a while. It changes with the environment. You end up, in the end, I was realizing that it wasn't a ghost or a being or anything coherent. It was a phenomenon.
Yeah.
Is what it was. And, but this is a good movie. This is real close to what it's like when you see it.
Yeah.
Or when you have a poltergeist phenomenon. It's like this.
I mean,
not quite as coherent, but.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, if you're going to do a movie like a narrative, you know, you usually have to have a beginning, a middle, and an end.
There has to be some kind of story. Otherwise, people are going to get annoyed. They're like, what kind of fucking story is this?
It'll be like scattershot.
Exactly. Yeah. They're like, what kind of fucking movie is this? What kind of story is it? So I understand why they did it that way. But if you see a real Poltergeist, it's fucking all over the place. It doesn't make any damn sense. There's no beginning, middle, or end, and it didn't mean anything in the end.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But this was it, yeah.
But this is real close. This movie's real close to the phenomenon.
Yeah, but this was like a really good one. Like I said, this guy, Brandon Christensen, his other movie, Stillborn, is also on Shudder, and that was also very good if you want to check that out. Also, this is the same writer that did Grave Encounters. I think Grave Encounters might be on Shudder too, or maybe it's on Netflix, because I watched that not too long ago, and that's also very good. So, you know, these are some guys that are making some good shit. Like I said, not super original story, but, you know, what is? It's just, you have to take something like this and just make, like, a really good, creepy, enjoyable movie out of it. And I think they, like, knocked it out of the park, honestly. So, if you have Shudder, like, definitely check it out. It might be streaming. I think it's streaming on somewhere else, too. I think it's on, I think you can rent it on YouTube for, like, $3 or something like that. So, if you want to watch it. But I liked it a lot. It had just some really, really creepy scenes and like just really creepy shit in it, and one like I said, the part on the stairs, like that really shocking moment that really like fucking, I mean, you were sitting right there when I was just like, holy shit.
Yeah. it didn't have jump scares per
not
se,
really
like in the Conjuring universe there were fucking lots of damn jump scares.
It just showed you some
pretty fucking eerie shit. Me personally, I didn't see anything like that in a Poltergeist experience, but that feeling that you had is the feeling that you get when you see the real thing.
Right,
they just evoked it a different way.
Yeah.
In reality, it doesn't have to be that dramatic to give you that fucking feeling.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I really, really liked this movie a lot. That was like super creepy. And like I said, if you have Shudder, check it out. And check out his other ones too, because at least Stillborn is on there. Grave Encounters might be as well. I can't remember if it is. But yeah, check it out. Right, so the second movie we watched this week, we just kind of picked it randomly on randomly on Xbox rental. Now, had you seen, because Rob posted
Rob
on Tom's Shitty Movies, sent us the trailer, and then we saw that it was for
on
rent
on
Xbox. So Tom's like, oh, Rob told us to watch that movie, so we watched it.
No, that's not what I said.
Well,
I said Rob showed that to me.
Oh, showed that to me.
He showed that to me, and I was just...
And was like, what the fuck?
And I was like, what the fuck? And then I watched the trailer, and I'm like, okay, yeah, all right. And it was cheap, so...
The trailer looked funny.
Yeah. It was only like a $2.99 or $3.99 rental.
Yeah, I think
rental.
It was $3.99.
And it had Adrian Barbeau in it, had the dude that played Bishop from Aliens in it. And it had Bai Ling, who played a goth witch girl out of fucking The Crow.
Yeah, she's been in a shit ton of stuff.
Yeah, I hadn't seen her recently.
She's been, well, I looked at her Wikipedia page real quick, and she's still working.
Yeah,
I mean,
she's got to be 50-something years old
movies,
now.
Movies, TV, everything.
She's older than me. She's got to be 50-something years old, huh?
Yeah, got to be.
She looks great, though. She looked great. Skinny, boobs, still looks pretty. She was always pretty, but she looks great. And really, for what this movie is... This is what it is, this movie, okay? I gotta back up with this.
We're talking about Exorcism at 60,000
feet,
by the way.
Yeah, you're supposed to know off the bat what this is, okay? This is kind of like a laugh-a-minute movie that, you know, and it's a midnight movie, you know? It's like something back in the 80s. You'd rent it from your local VHS store when you were underage because you couldn't get your hands on porn. So you'd watch this. And it was fucking laughing at shit, laughing how stupid the movie is with some boobs. And totally, totally un-PC. It's got everybody's some kind of stereotype. Everything is outrageous and over the fucking top. It's goofy, fucking silly humor that's not well written, but it's just kind of fucking... It's just in poor taste. Everything is in fucking poor taste. But that's the genre. It's like a midnight movie. Jenny, I think, didn't really like it. But I just accepted it for what it was. I thought it was a masterpiece of fucking schlock. That's what it is.
Well, the problem I had with it, and like I said, it's, you know, the trailer looked funny. You know, this has like some big stars, and like, if, you know, they're essentially cameos.
Yeah, and they kind of phone it in.
But yeah, I mean, Bill Moseley is in this. Yeah. You know what I mean? It's Adrian Barbeau is in it.
Yeah.
Shit like that. And it looked kind of funny. They were shooting for like an airplane / Naked Gun throwback, like 70s, 80s mashup of The Exorcist
and Airplane
and Twilight Zone Nightmare at 60,000 or 30,000 feet or whatever.
It's everything.
Yeah. So in that way, this is really weird because it had that to it, but it also had that 90s scary movie.
Yeah.
You know, all those parodies they did of Scream and horror movies and stuff where, which I didn't think those movies were funny either because most of them were just kind of like, hey, we're doing this scene from this familiar horror movie, except with tits. And I was like, okay.
Yeah.
But yeah, so this movie struck me very much like that. And it was kind of like a thing where I think, I don't know if this was the director's intention. It was directed by Chad Farron, who also did a movie called Parasites back in 2016, which actually was quite good. But this one, it seemed almost like, I don't know if he was trying to like be edgy or non-PC or something like that.
Oh, because, of course.
Well, but to me, it just came across as like just really lazy. It just, well, it seemed very, it's like, oh, look, this guy's an Asian stereotype, and oh, look, there's a bloody tampon that somebody ate, and oh, look. It seemed like it was just very try hard, and a lot of the, it's really weird because a lot of the dialogue, it seemed like it was ad-libbed because it seemed like a lot of it was just like non-sequiturs.
Yeah.
And I was just like, what? What is even happening? Think, like, what are you even talking about?
I think this the script was vague, okay?
Yeah.
I think the script was very vague. I think each, they knew how the story arc would be, but I think each scene was semi-ad-libbed, all right? It seemed like improv. And it also seemed like what you're talking about, there used to be an old television or cable TV program called Mad TV.
This reminded me of like an unfunny sketch on that show.
They were about like that.
Except long.
one big long Mad TV skit is what it was like. But I didn't mind it. I liked it because it was kind of the genre of it. And I was kind of laughing with the movie, but also laughing at the movie at the same time. And for what I paid, I didn't feel like I was ripped off. It did make me laugh at it. It did some stupid shit. And it did some over-the-top shit. And I just...
See, to me,
You're not talking about Citizen Kane.
No, I know that. But it's like, it does seem to me that it was like, it thought that it was way more shocking or funnier than it actually was.
I think it was made quickly.
Definitely. Because the opening, when it first started, like the opening scene with the exorcist and like the exorcist going in there and like shooting the guy in the head and like the guy going in there discovering that he's killed his entire family, like while he was possessed, he's like, he's running in other rooms and you can just hear his voice going, oh no, my mother, oh no. Okay, that shit was funny.
Yeah.
And, you know, so the opening was funny. The score was great. The score actually reminded me of like The Frighteners or something like that.
Yeah.
Like an 80s, like a real epic score. So I was just like, oh, all right, I'm on board with
this. The movie looks good. It's got practical, it's got some effects.
Yeah, but then once it gets on the plane, it just seemed like it's very, I'm going to use one of Gordon Ramsay's favorite words. It's very shambolic, but not in a good way. It almost seemed like, I mean, you could tell, obviously, they filmed pretty much the entire thing in this airplane set, which was probably very small.
And I think they did this in a couple of days.
The editing was...
is all over the place.
Bizarre. It's like, I didn't even fucking... And I didn't even know... Like, shit would happen over here, and then suddenly everyone's over there with no... them not going over there. I'm like, what the fuck just happened? Like, what... So, also, the score, which is good, sometimes it was mixed so high that I couldn't hear what the people were saying. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And also, it doesn't help that, like, a lot of the... Like, you know, Bai Ling's character, you know, she had, like, this really, really, really thick... accent because they're going to Vietnam. It's like a Vietnamese airplane or whatever. And so I could barely understand what she was saying. And so I put the closed captioning on. And even then, like the closed captioning was clearly not what the characters were saying.
Yeah.
Like sometimes, and I was just like, what the fuck is happening? It's like everything just seemed really half-assed. And it's like shit like this could be funny, but like I said, the thing that happens with these type of parody movies, I've seen very funny parody movies, But I think this falls into the same thing as, like, you know, the Scary Movie franchise, where it's just, it just seems like they take, like, the laziest, most obvious route, and it just comes across as, like, I laughed a couple of times, like, the scenes with Adrienne Barbeau.
She was smiling through the whole thing, though.
I was just kind of like...
Because it's ridiculous, but I think it was supposed to be.
Well, and obviously it was supposed to be ridiculous, but I found it, like, really... I was just kind of like, hey.
It was also a bro movie. Very much a bro movie. I think the target was fucking,
well, yeah,
teenage boys.
But what I was going to say was, like, when Adrienne Barbeau was getting attacked by her dead dog, which came back to life. The dog's name was Pookie, by the way.
Yeah, it's funny.
Which we thought was funny. And she gets scalped. That was funny, kind of. When somebody punches off Lance Hendrickson's head, funny.
Yeah.
Other than that, I can't really think of the opening, funny. Other than that, I couldn't really think of anything. Like, a couple things were just like, oh, heh. You know what I mean? But other than that, it's like, it wasn't... You know what I mean? It was the same kind of thing, and I said this on in Tom Shitty Movies. I said this was like Holmes and Watson level, like where some of the shit was kind of funny, but then like some of it, it was just trying so hard to be funny, and it was just like falling flat. It was like watching like a comedian like up on stage, and they're just like taking the pipe, and you just like, it's like embarrassing like to watch them. It was kind of like that.
I understand what Jenny's saying, but I think she's taking it too seriously. The problem with Holmes and Watson, and there were times of Holmes and Watson that I fucking laughed. All right?
Okay, the shit where they were trying to stuff Queen Victoria into the trunk,
that shit was
fucking
funny. But the problem with Holmes and Watson is that if you had paid to see Holmes and Watson in the theater, or like, okay, we were on fucking
the A-list, yeah.
I would have felt ripped because it would have cost you about $11 to pay for that.
Right.
To see that. Or a person. All right. It was funny, but it wasn't $11 funny. It was dumb funny. Was it $2.99 funny? Yeah. Especially if you were at home drinking. Okay. So we didn't pay much for this movie.
Yeah.
We downloaded it. Okay. It probably would have been better if we were drinking and if we were dumber.
They should put that on the front of the DVD.
Yeah, it'd have been funnier if I was dumber.
If I was drunker and dumber.
Okay, it probably would have been
this
really
would have been much funnier.
The movie is what it is. You fucking rented a movie caught with that damn title, okay?
Well, it looked funny. The previews looked
I thought
funny.
It was kind of funny, but I thought it was funny.
It seemed, it was only like an hour and 27 minutes long, and it seemed... endless.
I thought it seemed funny. Like
it was never going to
end. We're just
going
to have to disagree on this. I thought Bai Ling fucking carried the movie.
She was probably the best thing in it.
She was almost in every damn scene, and she was a funny character, and she was clowns her way through this whole fucking movie. And it's rare that a fucking woman can clown her way through an hour and a half of movie. I think, and as the audience, you could still go along with it. There was some shit about that character I still don't understand. Like, what was that on her forehead? She had one big, huge, fat eyebrow painted on, and bangs
in
to hide it.
In some scenes, it was there, and in some scenes it wasn't.
Some scenes it wasn't there.
Which I don't know if that was intentional.
But it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. In a movie, we're not talking about Citizen Kane.
Oh, I know.
That
but
added to it for me. That added to...
It's very ramshackle.
Added to it for me that they were just making this shit up as they were going along, I think.
Clearly.
And that they were pulling shit out of their asses. And I still liked it. I was like, all right.
It's sad because I like the concept, but it really seemed like they took the easiest route for everything. It just did everything like as half-assed as possible.
It was just a group of people trying to, on the screen, trying to make me laugh. That's all it was.
Well, which that would have been cool, but it's just like a lot of it just wasn't funny to me. It was just kind of like,
yeah, but there's a difference.
Had there been like better comic timing, or had they gone a little bit cleverer with the jokes instead of just being super obvious about everything, then it would have been funnier.
Better comic writing.
Yeah, the writing was really,
the thing
really
about
poor.
Airplane was very well written.
It was.
And laid out. There was nothing left to chance in Airplane.
Yeah.
Every fucking thing was a gag or some kind of a...
See, and parodies like that... Right. I mean, Airplane was funny. The Naked Gun was funny. Parodies can be funny.
This one was more spontaneous. You could tell they didn't really write a lot of this shit.
I hope they didn't.
I think a lot of it was improv. All right?
Yeah, because some of it didn't make sense. Like, two characters would be having a conversation.
I'd be like, what did that mean?
And it didn't seem like they were talking. It seemed like they were having two different conversations.
Sometimes.
Like, you know what I mean? And I'm just like, what are they even talking about? I didn't get it. It just seemed like a bunch of non sequiturs.
Sometimes, yeah.
Yeah.
But from day one, I did not take this movie serious, nor did I expect it to be high quality. I expected it to be kind of outrageous, and it was in a certain way. And it was also crazy, and it was kind of dumb, and it was fucking silly. But I knew it was going to be that way.
Yeah, I mean, if you go into it knowing... I mean, I went into it knowing that it was going to be dumb, but I was still expecting it to be funny, but it just...
I thought it was going to be kind of like, you know, some of those fucking really bad action films from the 80s, you know what I mean, where it's just fucking blonde bimbos with rocket launchers shooting down helicopters that are clearly fucking models, clearly models of helicopters. And fucking dudes with mullets and fucking 44 Magnum automatics and shit. I, you know what I mean? And it was something that, you know, that you saw at midnight on fucking TNT channel. Remember, what was it?
Yeah.
It was one of those.
Yeah.
So I knew it was going to be something like that.
Like Hard Ticket to Hawaii.
Yeah, like Hard Ticket to Hawaii.
This wasn't as funny as that.
Hard Ticket to Hawaii wasn't trying to be funny.
I know, but it was still funny. It was still funnier than this.
Right. Well, this is kind of like, imagine if Airplane, okay, was done by the same dude who did Hard Ticket to Hawaii. It would be like that.
And also, he had had half of his brain removed.
I don't know. You're shitting on a movie a little too much. I think I got my $2.99's worth. If I was fucking drunk, I'd liked it even more.
I probably would have too, but I wasn't drunk enough to think it was funny.
I liked it even more. And it was something that you would just put on to fucking laugh at, you know? And I have a feeling that the movie was made very quickly. I have a feeling because
a lot of it seemed kind of incompetently done. And this is not like the director has made movies before. He's made good movies before, so I don't really know. This just seemed like it was like a throwaway.
It looked like most of it was taking place in the airplane.
Yeah.
And I have a feeling that a lot of that might have been filmed only in 3 or 4 days.
Yeah, that would not surprise me in the least. Right. Because like I said, it's just...
And then things were added, like certain special effects scenes were added to kind of patch it together.
I mean,
but it is what it is.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? This movie is what it is.
I mean, if that sounds like something that you would like, if you like parodies and stuff like that, I didn't find it particularly funny. I just, like I said, it's all the jokes seemed really, really obvious. And it seemed very much like a 90s, like, sub-scary movie type of thing, which I didn't really think those were particularly funny either. Just because it seemed everything is obvious. They never, you know what I mean? You can see every single joke coming from, like, a mile away.
If I was 14 or 15, I would have thought this shit was fucking hilarious.
Yeah.
All right? I'm 50 years old. Okay? The people who are doing this, making this program... I could tell they didn't really think it was that funny, okay? But a 14 or a 15 or a 16-year-old, they probably would have think this shit was fucking hilarious. Especially with skinny little fucking Bai Lang running around with her fucking boobs popping out of the top of her fucking...
Yeah.
And then lesbian nuns possessed by the devil and shit. They would have loved that shit. Yeah. 15 or 16 would have loved this movie. And that was the target.
Yeah, that's, you know...
Yeah, it's because they couldn't rent porn or something. I don't know. Although they can get hold of that.
That's what I mean. Nowadays, 15 to 16 years, you don't need movies like this because you can get porn.
Right. It would have been even better back in the 80s.
Yeah, this seems like kind of a movie out of time.
It's kind of a little bit out of time.
I can see how they were trying to homage that, but it just, I don't know. It kind of fell flat for me, I think. But, you know, if it sounds like something you'd be into, you can rent it for $3.
It's only a couple bucks. Yeah.
$4 or how much it is.
And you can laugh with or at the movie.
You have a choice. Or both things.
Or both at the same time. And then, you know, I recommend fucking tequila.
I was going to say, I recommend booze or possibly weed or both.
Yeah.
For maximum enjoyment.
Don't expect Citizen Kane or fucking... You know, fucking the greatest story ever told with Muck and Moses.
Don't even expect Airplane or Scary Movie because it's not even as good as those. So, you know, but whatever. Everybody's got different taste in movies.
It's a B movie.
And it sounds like...
It's a fucking B movie.
And like I said, there's a lot of famous people in it, so you can kind of like watch, you know, and be like, hey, what are they doing in this movie? You know what I mean? There's a whole bunch of people.
It's a B movie.
But yeah, so check it out or don't. I didn't like it, Tom. All right, a third movie we watched for matinee this week was another one that we rented on Xbox. We didn't want to see this one for a long time because we saw the trailer like a few months back and we were like, hey, that looks pretty good. This is an animated movie. Superman Red Son.
Yeah, the communist Superman.
Yeah, this is from, I guess it's from, there was a, back in 2003, there was like a 3-volume graphic novel from their, what is it called, their Elsewhere series?
Yeah, it's a parallel universe.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Basically what you're talking about is that you're talking about like the mirror universe in Star Trek. It's kind of like that. And the premise is what would happen in another universe? Okay, no. The premise is there's another universe where Superman ended up landed in the Soviet Union.
Yeah.
And was raised around in communism and was friends with Stalin and everything. And it's fascinating, really. It's not the same Soviet Union, you know, per se. It's a it's an alternate one. And the United States is an alternate one. It's an alternate universe. So when they're talking about the Soviet Union, it's not exactly the same Soviet Union, you know. And the United States is not exactly the same United States either. It's a different one.
Yeah.
But there is a lot of political content in it, and a lot of I would call it probably like criticism of political systems, both communism and, you know, non-communist states in it. But it's still a fucking good movie. I liked it. It was all right. There was some obvious political messaging in there, but I didn't mind it too much. It was, you know.
Well, and you have to think, too, that this came out. It's not really commenting on shit that's happening today. It was because the story came out in 2003.
Throughout all of history.
Yeah, and it was the thing about it, too. And one criticism that I've seen, and I don't know how accurate this is because I haven't read the 3-volume you know, graphic novel that it's based on, was that, you know, they left a lot of stuff out because apparently, you know, the book, they go a lot more into detail about like all the political shit and everything. But you have to think this is an hour and a half animated movie.
Yeah.
You can't really put everything in there.
Probably have been better as a miniseries.
Which maybe it would have. But that said,
still pretty solid.
I actually really, I thought this was like a really solid animated movie. You know, the animation is just about what you would see on like that Batman one, that animated Batman one, that Mask of the Phantasm or whatever the hell that was that came out a while back. It kind of looked like that. So it's really nice, like old fashioned like animation. It's not like, you know, computer generated or anything. And it's really kind of an interesting, I have to say, like everybody in the alternate universe, because everybody's in this, not just Superman, there's Batman, a Wonder Woman, and a Green Lantern, sort of.
Yeah.
And, you know,
Brainiac.
Brainiac, Lex Luthor, Lois Lane, everybody is in this, but they're like different
versions of
them. Yeah, and like some of them are like reversed.
Yeah, what's weird is it's almost kind of like, almost kind of medieval. It has a very medieval feel to it. In the same way that the Star Trek mirror universe is very kind of medieval.
Yeah.
The mentality's different, a lot more savage in a way. Batman's a terrorist. He's trying to overthrow Superman and get rid of the Soviet Union to take Russia back, you know? So in a way, kind of like an ultra-nationalist. Wonder Woman's kind of a man-hater.
Yeah.
Lex Luthor is a hero, kind of an American
hero.
He's
kind of a good guy. Like, he still has some douchey qualities, but
he does kill people.
But he's usually like,
he's
more of a heroic figure.
Right. He's married to Lois Lane.
Yeah.
Who's like, kind of a feminist, but also in the relationship because the sex is good and that he's furthering her career. Which is some weird shit. I liked it though, man. Everything was kind of fucking weird about it. It's like I said, it had a medieval vibe to it. United States was real capitalist, but it was still better than the Soviet Union, because the Soviet Union was kind of like, had slave gulags and shit like that. It's just, you just got to watch the movie for yourself.
I mean, it's like, it's a really great, I can see why, like, the guy that wrote the original, you know, the 2003 comic book, Mark Miller, I think his name is, you can see how he said he got the idea back in the early 2000s when he had read, like, an old Superman comic that said, like, something about Superman landing in the ocean, like, between the United States and Russia. And he got to thinking, he's like, even when he was a little kid, he's like, man, what would have happened if Superman had landed in the Soviet Union and he had been raised differently and stuff? Like, how would that play out? So he was, like, thinking about this even from when he was, like, 13 or 14 years old. It was, like, a fascinating topic to him, because it was almost kind of like, you could go into, like, nature versus nurture. Like, you know, would Superman turn out the same, even though he was raised in a completely different system as he came out?
Yeah,
you know?
And the answer is no, he wouldn't be the same.
He had, like, a lot of similar traits, and he did kind of...
Yeah, man, that dude was...
It's hard to say.
That dude was doing a lot. He was a fucking totalitarian dictator who was trying to fucking bring about a fucking utopian one-world government. And he made the Soviet Union swallow up all the entire nations of the planet except the United States. The United States was like the last holdout. And then really, whoever wrote it, they didn't really quite get the politics straight, I don't think. Because Superman was trying to endorse, like, basically global communism. That's what he wanted. When that didn't work, the United States said, well, we're going to make a global government, which is really, like, more of the same. So you'll have to draw the conclusions to yourself, you know.
Also,
I mean,
I like...
One-world governments just aren't going to work. Because it's just a one-size-fits-all governments just can't work.
I also like that Lex Luthor cloned Superman, essentially, and made...
Made him Superior Man.
Superior Man. To fight against Superman. Yeah, I thought it was funny, like, when he came out and he said, I give you Superior Man. I'm like, oh, of course.
Yeah. The American version's got to be even bigger and better and fucking more roid-raged out and shit.
And he had to like a dick, like, America! He was kind of that. Not quite that bad, but, you know. It was like, so
he
it was
wasn't
really
a natural creation, though.
Yeah.
And Superman... The Soviet, the communist version of Superman, I guess you could say he kind of became the Superman that we would know.
That's what I was going to say.
But
it's like,
a long
time. Spoiler alert,
yeah,
but you know what I mean. It kind of does. I mean, I guess it's not too much of a spoiler because, like, the book's been out since
2003. He thought he was doing the right thing to create a utopia.
Right. So he was a victim more of naivete than actually
malice. And Stalin,
like,
told him that. Stalin told him that he was too naive and for the world, and he was sheltering him. You just got to see it. It's a good, it's a solid movie.
I liked it a lot. Movie. Like I said, I haven't read the book. I have read that, like, people were, like, mad that it didn't go as much into depth into the characters, into the political situation, into the whole question of nature versus nurture and stuff as the book did. But, I mean, you know, reasonably, there's only so much you can do, like, in a movie this short. So I think they did an admirable job with what they had. And it's, like, a fascinating thought experiment. And like I said, I have to say that, like, all of the character, the kind of Soviet versions of all the characters look way cooler than the regular, like, Superman's kind of, like, Soviet outfit. And, like, I liked Wonder Woman's kind of more Soviet looking outfit with all the red and everything.
Russian Batman was pretty cool.
Yeah, so it's like, so everyone, like, looked a lot cooler, because I've always loved that aesthetic. And I have to say, like, the opening sequence, I fucking love the whole look of
that. The graphic
that.
Design, They're big into Art Deco looking stuff.
Yeah, see, I love that kind of shit. Yeah. I've always loved that kind of look. But yeah, this is definitely, definitely worth checking out if you're into Superman, if you're into DC Comics, or if you're any of this kind of stuff. This just came out in late February, I think. Yeah. So this is probably one of the most recent movies that we've done in the last few weeks.
For me, Superman's always going to be Christopher Reeves. With Superman 1 and 2. Superman 3 wasn't that good, you know what I mean? But Superman 1 and 2, and then the Donner Cut. Superman 1 was a fucking masterpiece. For me, that's Superman. All right. The tone was right. But this one, I would include it in there, that this was a solid Superman movie.
Oh, yeah.
Very solid, you know, an alternate version of Superman. So I liked it.
Yeah, and like I said, if you like, I think, what the fuck are those are those alternate universe DC comics called? Elsewheres?
I don't know, something like that.
But yeah, they have like a whole line of like, hey, take that character and like put him in a different, like an alternate universe and see what happens. Like you said, like the Star Trek Mirror Universe. But yeah, it's, you know, if you like animated movies, if you like DC comics, if you like any of that stuff and you haven't seen it yet somehow, yeah, I recommend it. I really thought I enjoyed it and I thought it was like fascinating seeing those characters in like a different context. You know, I found that really interesting. So, you know, check it out.